Good morning. This is Susan Santiago. And what you just heard was a part of the great Leonard Cohen song, Anthem, from his CD, The Essential Leonard Cohen. Author Marietta McCarty's new book introduces the reader to a quote from this song. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And regardless of how many years we've lived in a particular residence, and in many cases, if not most, when moving to a new one, there is always some degree of nostalgic sentiments that accompany such a transition. And it might include leaving the home to which you brought your firstborn, or maybe it was a place that had a very special weeping willow tree in the backyard that you love so much. And perhaps it was the way the sun lit up the kitchen every morning. Or it simply included a plethora of memories of family, friends, and happy, maybe some not so happy, memories that were created and live on as you move on. My guest this morning, Marietta McCarty, has had such an experience on what I would call a grand and life-altering scale, as narrated in her new book titled Leaving 1203, Emptying a Home, Filling the Heart, published by The Philosophy Shop. She's a New York Times bestselling author as well as a philosopher and teacher, and she's on the phone and will be telling us more about her life as well as her life through and after her journey of leaving 1203. Good morning, Marietta.
Good morning, Susan. How nice to begin with Leonard Cohen. Your listeners are going to be sorry they're not going to have an hour of Leonard, I fear.
He's sort of like that, isn't he, Marietta? You just want more and more of it, you know? It's such a rich, deep...
Susan?
Yes. Can you hear me okay? Hello?
Susan?
Oh, yes. Can you hear me, Marietta? I can hear you.
Susan?
Yes.
Susan?
Yes.
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, terrific, terrific. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but nothing major.
Right.
What's a show without a little technical difficulty? Marietta, it's such an honor to have you as a guest here on Pieces of Peace. And before we discuss your new book, I'd like to talk a little about your early life. You grew up in Richmond, Virginia, and were quite the tennis champion, having as a very young girl played on the tennis circuit.
Yes, I did. I say in Leaving 1203 that when I came across my first tennis racket and a white tennis ball, very few people probably remember the white tennis ball with which I won my first championship, I was really struck by how fortunate I was to have been given the gift of knowing how to play that game, because it's been part of my life forever, and it taught me so many lessons about human nature and persistence and just coping with whatever comes your way. And I was a man saw me and my father at Bird Park, tennis courts in Richmond, and was watching us sort of bang balls around three courts, and asked if he could give us some lessons, if he could give me a lesson. And his name is Sam Woods, and he taught me for free. He taught three generations of Richmond children to play the game that he loved so much, and he taught me towards the very end of his life.
And he must have seen some amazing potential in you, Marietta.
Well, he did, and the potential that I saw, that I thought I had, was to play second base for the New York Yankees. But my family and Mr. Woods saw something else that was more practical, and yes. And so I played nationally, and I played during college, and I've taught the game forever at different times, whether a tennis camp or clinic or just a lesson or just being out on the courts here where I live in Charlottesville now. I think it's a lovely game. And a game that lasts a lifetime.
So you must have also liked baseball a lot.
Yes. I just came back from a New England book tour, and the first stop my college roommate and I made was to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. I looked everywhere for my name, and I was nowhere in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But I loved it. It was a great experience to see that and to learn about the All-American women's team that traveled during and after the Second World War, and reading about them and seeing some highlights of their games was really a thrill.
That's wonderful. And when you were on the tennis circuit, Marietta, was this the first time you had traveled any distance from home by yourself?
Yes, mm-hmm. It was. And I was any reader can tell from leaving 1203, a very homesick. I loved that home, as did four generations of people. And I'll never forget my first trip away from home. I think I was 10. Maybe, at the most, and it was to Suffolk, Virginia, not very far away. And I called home every morning at 6 o'clock, and I played in the 12, 14, 16, and 18 and under divisions in singles and doubles, and lost 6-love, 6-love every match. And when I got back, Mr. Woods, my teacher, and my parents said that, told me, well, you know, that was just a really great experience. And I wondered at the time for whom that was such a great experience. But I got better. I practiced, and I got better, and I got stronger. And so, yes, that was really traveling through tennis that got me to more than a neighborhood overnight.
Wonderful. And later you were an academic, athletic, and community leader at Hollins University in Virginia, and you graduated summa cum laude and were a member of Phi Beta Kappa at Hollins, and then you earned your master's degree from the University of Virginia.
Yes, and so philosophy is my background, Susan, and I taught philosophy for many years, and I realized I taught at the community college here in Charlottesville, Piedmont, that I call philosophy the art of clear thinking. And I wanted to make it accessible for everyone in our service region, so I began to take philosophy to children. And I call philosophy the ability to think clearly, clear thinking that's marked by good conversation and engaging people and talking about ideas. And so that led to my first three books, which are designed to bring in music, such as Leonard Cohen, poetry, film, to be able to talk about belonging or serenity or the things that really matter in life. So leaving 1203 was a bit of a departure for me.
That's amazing. And actually, from your amazing background, you would probably consider yourself a philosopher, I would think.
Susan?
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Susan?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Susan?
Yes. You know what? Why don't I call you back? I'm going to put some more music on.
All right.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you fine.
Okay, perfect. If it goes off again, I'll just hang up and I'll call you back and we'll put some more music on, okay?
All right.
Okay, that sounds great. And would you consider yourself a philosopher, Marietta?
Would I? Yes.
Yeah.
Someone who's interested in the world of ideas that my father first introduced me to, pondering about time and wondering about what constitutes the good life and trying to live the best possible life for yourself and in relationship to others and on the planet. So, yes, I do consider myself someone invested in clear thinking and good conversation.
Beautiful. And how important to you is critical thinking in conjunction with philosophy?
Well, I think it's the same thing, really, mm-hmm. and this ability to see things as they really are. I can tell you that I think that the way I approached emptying my childhood home was definitely, I surely benefited from my years talking about clear thinking and perspective and valuing stillness and serenity and calling on those things and just having the confidence and the trust in the outcome was definitely a reflection of my background in philosophy.
Excellent. And how would you describe, Marietta, your childhood in one sentence?
Uh, I would describe it as a perfect way to begin life on this earth.
Wow, that's wonderful. And tell us about your family, including Billy McCarty.
Billy McCarty. Well, my family, my parents, and I have a brother, Patrick, so it was the four of us, and we lived in apartments, and some of my earliest memories are of Sunday drives when we were going around looking for a house, and this went on for a long period of time, and finally, I thought it was a castle on a hill when we saw 1203 and all fell in love with it. At the same time. And so 1203 was where we moved. It wasn't a castle. It wasn't. It's a three-bedroom Cape Cod-style house on a dead-end street, big oaks, big pines, sort of a forested hideaway, not too far from the University of Richmond, about a mile, I would say, from the University of Richmond. And the promise when we moved in, Susan, was that we would get a dog because we were finally at home, and we had three-quarters of an acre of earth to plant and to run and to play. And so Patches was our first dog, and there's a long line of spoiled canines. And Billy McCarty was my mother's West Highland Terrier. My father died in 1991, and Billy came into my mother's life in 1999. And when she died and the home emptying project became mine in 2013, Billy McCarty became mine as well. And he was with me every day of the 3 months during which we emptied the home.
So he was your loyal companion and
he
support.
He was, and I sort of took leads from him, and he took leads from me, and he'd always thought of coming to visit me with my mother in Charlottesville as a holiday, and so he knew, I could tell that in his dog world, he knew exactly what had happened and why we were leaving, and that's something that we did together, sadly, gratefully, happily, and he was my loyal companion, that's for sure.
Beautiful. And Marietta, what inspired you to become a writer, and when did you realize that indeed you had a gift for it?
Well, if you mean by that a published writer, when my father, Susan, was very, very sick in 91 before he died, he asked me to be sure to write that book. And I promised him that I would. And at that time, I had been traveling around, as I mentioned, in our service region, taking philosophy to children. And he loved the stories that I would tell about how wise they were and how much I was learning and how they absolutely startled my college students with when that would mix them together for a picnic with their understanding of prejudice or compassion or different ideas. And so I was going to keep that promise to my father. And it took me 15 years before Little Big Minds, my first book, appeared. And so that's really what got me into the effort to publish a book. I kept wishing during those 15 years that my father had asked me just to write, I was writing that book, but I was not publishing it. So it was with a great deal of excitement that book came out in 2007, and that really started me on my career as a writer. I'd always loved to write letters, loved to write papers in college, and so this just furthered my interest in it.
Beautiful. And that was Little Big Mind, Sharing Philosophy with Kids. And then you wrote the Nautilus Gold Award winner, How Philosophy Can Save Your Life, 10 Ideas That Matter Most.
Yes, and I remember so well being on your station on KWMR being interviewed about how philosophy can save your life and how much I enjoyed that particular interview. And so, again, this was after Little Big Minds came out talking about philosophy with children, adults wondered, where's my book that you make it simple to do this thing called philosophy that was so scary in college? And so, yes, so How Philosophy Can Save Your Life has given people the opportunity to talk about simplicity and what good communication is and empathy and adapting to change by being flexible. So, yes, it's all of my work has been designed to benefit the reader and to involve them in a meaningful way. And in Leaving 1203, although I don't use the word philosophy in it, certainly my background must have been the way that the reason behind why I approached it as I did, why I did with everything in the house what I did. I think that comes from my background in philosophy.
And your third book was The Philosopher's Table, How to Start Your Philosophy Dinner Club, Monthly Conversation, Music, and Recipes. That sounds wonderful.
Yes, because if there's one thing that's an icebreaker, it is food and passing food around a table. And so in that book, there are different parts of the world. It begins in January in Japan and travels to Greece and travels to different places, Chicago. You've got to get Chicago's food in there. And so there's the music and a philosopher from that area and conversation and then recipes for different things that you can fix. So, again, it's the breaking bread of a good conversation that was definitely a part of my childhood and all of my years in the house at 1203.
That's an amazing idea to have a philosophy club and meet once a month and break
and
bread.
People enjoy it because they enjoy having something in particular to discuss, adapting to change. In November, it's a Chinese food and talking about change and adaptation to it, to come and have something that everyone can talk about together, and then to have a kind of conversation that perhaps you've never had before, and to have people come that are friends of friends, maybe that you've never met before.
Beautiful. And Marietta, don't you think sharing food as well as music are such human commonalities?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. And I think part of the gift of those books, and especially of Leaving 1203, is what I'm finding from readers, and as I travel with Leaving 1203, is how much we have in common, mm-hmm. how that our humanity is shared, and there are really no degrees of separation among us, and that is what I find. And the more we're together and listen well, in addition to talking, we learn that. And I think we feel better about our lives and better about having roots and belonging here.
And your new book, Leaving 1203, Emptying a Home, Filling the Heart, published by The Philosophy Shop, is the fourth one that you've written. And this outstanding book was the result of a life-altering event, as you mentioned, that occurred in your life in 2013. And I'd like to introduce this event by reading a brief paragraph from it.
All right.
What indescribable joy to experience recovery in the midst of loss. Hot and sweaty, teary and aggravated, I was also happy and invigorated. An overarching wellspring of hope sustained me. I heard a whispered promise that my life would be forever enriched. Tell us about this, Marietta, and the event that occurred that literally launched an amazing and invaluable three-month journey in 2013.
So I think, Susan, that probably on some level since my father died in 91, I had dreaded what would eventually happen in terms of leaving 1203, and the only thing that would make that happen would be my mother's death. And so That came to me. We had a lovely garden party in her memory in May of 2013, and then my three-month journey, she left me, my mother did, with this job, trusted me to do with the things in the house what should be done with them. And with the exception of a very few things that she pictured in my home in Charlottesville or designated for my brother or designated for other family members, she left that up to me. And so something happened very early on when after the garden party and I came home to Charlottesville, and I went back for the first day, and there was nobody there waiting. So Billy and I head back, and I beep the horn, as we've done for 56 years, announcing our arrival. And it's just breathtaking that it was just me and Billy that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat in the backyard on the patio and just let the birds sing as they'd sung since I was 8, and looked at the 10 paces between the back gate and the back stoop, thinking about how many footsteps had crossed that path, and just sort of let everything sink in, and sort of let the house begin to take care of me. Somehow I felt that all the goodness, all the good times, all the memories that were stored there, all the people who had loved and been loved there, were going to have my back during this journey. And so Billy and I took a walk that early in the afternoon. I came back and went around the house a bit. And then I came upon a series of photos, small photos, maybe 6 all told. And there's a river town named Gloucester in Virginia. And in these photographs, I'm 2 with that many teeth being passed from one set of loving arms to another for yet another kiss as we're having a day in the sand at Gloucester. And in that moment, it shifted from my responsibility to an opportunity for me to return that love. Who else was supposed to empty this house but me? And it would then become my privilege, because the old house had secrets for me, and I had a lot to learn and so much that was valuable to relearn about good living during these 3 months. And so another thing that struck me, I think that was equally as important, not long after the discovery of those photographs, Susan, was it's really hot in the dining room, and there were Christmas decorations everywhere, and people come by to help, and Billy was underfoot, and there were children and adults, and so much going on. And I felt so desolate at seeing this house begin to be dismantled,
mm-hmm.
and alone, although I knew that wasn't true. And I realized that probably 2 blocks from me, someone was doing exactly the same thing, and that this is a universal experience, saying farewell to a beloved space for the last time. And that it is so universal, and I knew there's a story here, and I have to tell it. I felt compelled to tell it. Mm-hmm. And it was 5 years later that Leaving 1203 came out, because for a couple of years, The Flosser's Table was just being released. A couple of years, I just had to let it seep in, and I sort of slept with it, showered with it, walked with it, traveled with it. How was I going to tell the only story I knew, which was my own, and make it universal, so that my promise to the reader was that if you come home to 1203 with me in this book, that is your ticket home for you, wherever that may be. Because I feel that telling of the story, this book could probably have gone 100 different ways. And I think giving it time to form itself, by the time I was ready to write, it was the most magical creative experience I've ever had. It was all there. The memories were so clear. Kindergarten was as clear as 2013 was to me in writing it. And it was just a beautiful experience for me to actually have the words appear and sort of come through me to become this book.
Wonderful. And I'd like to do a station ID very quickly, and then I'd like to know if you would kindly read a passage from your new book, 1203. You're listening to KWMR, 90.5 Point Reyes Station, 89.9 Bolinas, and 92.3 in San Geronimo Valley. This is KWMR. And our special guest is Marietta McCarty. Her new book is, she is actually a New York Times best-selling author, and her new book is Leaving 1203, Emptying a Home, Filling the Heart. And it's published by the Philosopher's Shop. Marietta, would you like to read some of your new book to our listeners?
Well, I have chosen something, Susan, mm-hmm. that I think gives a good feeling for how I approached it. I opened myself completely to the experience and took everything in. I let memories come, and I let emotions come. I touched or saw everything and really gave myself time for reflection during these 3 months. So on one particular day, a friend from Charleston and I had worked outside that day. And this is at the end of the day. Night is sort of beginning to fall. And it's the chapter called The Grill and a Ping Pong Table. And it's about mm-hmm. all of the outdoor time that we spent, particularly a family moving from apartments, what it was like for us to move to a place and see this patio gradually take shape. And if we could be outside, we were. So, Susan, I am with Billy at the end of the day, and my father was the master of the grill. So, from leaving 1203, I scoped out Mac's realm today, bare feet cooled by irregular flagstones, and felt the pure contentment that we patio lovers knew by heart. The world entertained us. I marvel now that I never heard June or Mac utter the irksome phrase, "I'm too busy." My parents and grandparents worked hard. Surely financial worries loomed at times. They may have been exhausted, many responsibilities to meet, but never too busy. We took time and spent it. While Amy and Billy played the parts of after-cookout patio snoozers, I gave in to the powerful sensory impressions that washed over me. I sat with my grinning father, a slow cook gleefully divorced from his banker role, and the aftertaste of charred marshmallows lingered on my burnt tongue. I tasted his leftover barbecued chicken, packed for my Monday lunch to classmates' envy. Fresh-cut grass mingling with faint gasmoor fumes smelled of summer. The carillon from the nearby church provided year-round patio music, the number of chimes tolling at the top of the hour, the only timekeeper we heeded. And the church bells announcing 8 o'clock on this evening echoed the notes of my youth. As a child, I delighted in the woofing of first one and then another neighborhood dog, barking on cue in their call-and-response chorus. I pretended to their language, wanting to be part of their world. And I listened tonight as another band struck up and Billy harmonized in his high-pitched voice. Crickets chirped and a frog croaked, interrupted by the disquieting siren from the fire station not far away, the same sounds of a half century ago. I was overwhelmed and overjoyed. It grew dark on the patio. Ah, yes, outdoor nighttime gatherings give me back my childhood. When I glean the inviting hum of easygoing starlit conversations, I hear once more those love voices of yesteryear, naturally lowered as the sun set on the patio, Sunday's warm, soothing timber at closing time. Lightning bugs blink, globes protect candles from the wind, clusters of votives burn low. The moon, from sliver to round, lights the night. The Little Dipper befriends me as ever. And the North Star fascinates and comforts as it did when I twirled a ping-pong paddle, reassuring in its consistency, a sign that I can always find my way home. On the 1203 patio, I first marveled that the earth was spinning, and I sought any inkling of movement with bare feet planted on blue slate. Nighttime is the right time to plant bare feet again. Come, let's dawdle. Swing with me. Stand still time. Tickle my fancy, North Star.
Wow. I went right there.
To the patio.
And the summer.
Bare feet on flagstone.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Go ahead.
And that particular passage stands out for me, Susan, because there is something so powerful about objects left to speak for themselves. So it can be an egg beater or my father's old grill that was now rusty that we saw that particular day, or an old hula hoop, or something from the kitchen. Potholders, and when you just have those objects and they're telling the story of all the lives who have passed through this beloved home, it is such a powerful thing to take in. And that particular evening on the patio, I just let all those memories come back. And every time I did this, I felt more restored That's not to say I wasn't on some level also sad, but I felt restored, as you read from that paragraph, mm-hmm. and rejuvenated and really feeling marvelous about the future.
That is so beautiful. And isn't it amazing, Marietta, when there is something that is such a strong association with those good times, those summers and the childhood, it really does move us.
Yes, yes. And I think that one thing that happens with memories, and I was the one that got to stand back after these 56 years and see everyone come full circle, so that my grandmother and my parents, they're not just in those roles. They are people that now had long, full-bodied lives. So, for example, I came across from my grandmother short stories that she'd written during the Depression that got very close to being published themselves. I'd heard that she was a writer, but down by the oil furnace in the basement in a very pretty pine box, in folders that my father had written, were different short stories. And so she had sent them to an editor in New York and gotten comments back. And so I'm just marveled at how she found the time and the resilience after working as a massage therapist all day, supporting two little girls during the Depression. And one of her short stories, entitled Upstream, is about 5,000-10,000 words longer than Leaving 1203. So her idea of a short story is very different from mine. And my father, to read his Blue Book Shakespeare exam that I found in his desk in the basement, and then to compare it to my own, to actually hold his draft orders in my hands for the first time when he did not speak about his service in the Second World War. He was a Navy pilot flying rescue planes. And to hold those draft orders and to feel what he must have felt was so powerful. So finding his messenger bag, Susan, was the way he told me in the most intimate way about his time serving his country. And the last entry in that messenger bag was the deed and the paperwork for 1203, and the construction on the house, second house on the right on a dead-end street, the fourth house on the whole street to be built, June 6, 1942, the very day that he got his draft orders. So 15 years later, we would come back, all of us, to this house on a hill, and it was just amazing to see that and to see him as a lifeguard at Virginia Beach, the telegrams he and my mother sent to each other during the war, and then to find my mother's songs that she had written, really, really good songs. And her nephew, Jonathan, is a musician, and he has put one of them to music and plays his aunt's Hello Spring whenever he plays his music around the Washington, D.C. area. So it was just amazing to see their lives. And there was so much evidence of how happy they were without me. That was one of the most wonderful things that I saw, you know, laughing at the ocean, you know, and savoring every single joy they possibly could despite coming out of the Depression and the sure outbreak of war that was about to happen, and just how much they relished time together. So, yes, I got to know the people who loved me first so much better during the 3 months of home emptying.
I think that's just wonderful. What a gift.
Yes, you know, often when I'm giving a book talk, wherever I am in the country, someone in the audience usually says, your parents gave you a great gift. Mm-hmm. And if I had known that emptying this beloved home would turn out to be such a gift, I certainly wouldn't have dreaded it, as I mentioned to you. I'm sure I had on some level. The last day when Billy and I left on August 8th, and the house was empty, it felt completely full. It felt that there was room now for everybody to come back in who had played a part in the life of this small, much-loved house.
And actually, your presence and your musing about all of this brought that energy back in.
I think so. Mm-hmm. It's the entire life for all of us is much more present, much more a part of me because of writing this book. It was a wonderful experience in that particular way because I'd spent so long thinking about it and I'd spent so much time in solitude just letting things flow through me, I was able to remember things that I don't think I could have remembered before. And so that whole summer I was locked into, I would say, a philosopher's focus and concentration. I didn't miss anything, and I just let everything I touched or saw, everything. Mm-hmm. And for me, all my life I've been, in my family they laugh about, I'm the original immaterial girl, that physical mm-hmm. objects don't have any meaning for me unless it's an old Raggedy Ann or a quilt or mm-hmm. something with sentimental value. But everything in the house took on immeasurable value to me, and it wasn't monetary. It was valuable because it had played a part in our lives. It was a token of those 56 years. And so I felt very tenderly and very responsible for everything in the house. And so after family and friends had taken what they wanted, I still had a pretty full house. I remember the day I found a crawl space that I didn't know existed with pretty much every copy of Gourmet magazine, and I thought, oh my goodness, how many more crawl spaces and what, you know, so what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. How can I honor this house and honor all the people who have loved it? What shall I do? And I did not have a plan, but I just trusted in it, and there was truly a moment in the kitchen when I saw a friend of my mother's and of mine running her hands over a platter and the scalloped edges of the platter, and she said, "This is so beautiful." And I said, "Would you like that?" I would love this. I would love this. Mm-hmm. And so I heard myself saying that more frequently mm-hmm. as books were packed, as this happened, as that happened. And then in a moment, I realized this is exactly what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it all away. I'm going to have 250 homes as the most homesick child. And so that, to me, was one of the most beautiful things, was seeing new relationships form on top of old relationships as my college students who were getting married, they didn't need a registry anywhere for gifts. They had their first place settings. They had dressers. They had what they needed from 1203. And as people, friends brought friends in to and it's storytelling. I think we talk about how shared our humanity really is. The stories that were told over these 3 months, Susan, were so wonderful. They were somebody would put on my mother's raincoat. Yes, that's vintage clothing for a teenage girl now, mm-hmm. and begin to tell stories about her grandmother, and then one story leads to another, and my father's cufflinks, or this mm-hmm. cake stand. A friend of someone came in. I didn't really know the man. He was very nice, and he was staring at this cake stand, and he said, my daughter wins the prize every year at the West Virginia State Fair for her cakes. And I said, does she have a cake stand? Oh, no, she's never had a proper cake stand. And so he left with that cake stand with just tears coming down his cheeks. And his friend said that whenever his daughter serves a cake, she never fails to tell the story of where it came from. And so the fact that these things are living on
yes.
other homes in places that I don't know, my childhood desk, some child at it whom I don't know, bird feeders all over, that gives me just the greatest joy.
Wow, that is absolutely outstanding. And Marietta, would you like to read another passage from your book?
Well, I've mentioned before, you know, when you write, there are two things I think that stood out to me as I was really honing the craft of writing, Susan, and one was that you can only write one book. So that means you're not trying to do too many things in a book. And so the book I wrote was the story of the 3 months of home emptying and how it filled my heart. And it is so interesting when you write your one book, you never know how, well, if, but how it will be appreciated and how it might be used. So all the uses and the reasons that people are enjoying this book is just so interesting and gratifying to me. And I think that one thing that they're finding in it, people love the humor. Humor is a great ally in any situation, but particularly in a difficult one. And it's what people are seeing, how they're being reminded of I think what we know to be ingredients of good living. So I will read what happened when I sat on the patio for the last time with Billy in the exact spot that he and I had been 3 months earlier as I was about to begin a process that I had no idea how to even make that first step. So 3 months later, we're on the patio in exactly the same place. And so here are my reflections. So that's how it happened. 3 months from there in May to here in August. I sat up perfectly straight, struck full force by beauty. While serving as emptier in residence, I pocketed the keys to good living. 1203 taught me true. I'm clinging for the rest of my life to these gems recovered this summer. Sit and listen. Serenity waits in silence. Foster hospitality and storytelling. Gather round and break bread over good conversation. Stoke the fires of courage and resilience. Persist regardless. Lean in with sensitivity no matter what. Grab a dab of gumption and get on with it. Say yes to adventure. Write a book. Make humor a best friend forever. It never fails. Humility points out the high road. Take it every time. Relaxed and comfortable companionship. Give time, take time. Savor a lazy day. Work hard, but stay unbusy. Set out fearless and free. Gobble up simple pleasures. Pack picnics, fire up the grill. Forget dollar signs, measure value with the heart. Let kindness and generosity win each day. Play. Plant deep roots in nature. Hustle outside. Dig and swim. Care. Choose happiness. Love life and live it full up. Invest all the way. Relationships last long, longer than time's reach. I should throw my arms skyward and touch the moon each night, steeped in gratitude for everyone who made my life possible. That grateful heart will ensure empathy and joy. Thank you, beloved brick teacher on a hill.
Wow. That is absolutely outstanding, Marietta. You are such a great writer.
That all the while I was able to reflect during these 3 months and going back over what really mattered, it was the best refresher course I could possibly have received in good living and what that means. And there's no reason that those lessons can't translate very, very well to 2019. It's not as if I'm suggesting that we live in the past. I'm suggesting that we take the best of what good living is that we learned and bring it back into our lives again to simplify, to listen more, to play more.
And what is so beautiful about this particular book and you yourself, Marietta, is the fact that you have the gift and the ability to translate this experience into a lesson, and a wonderful philosophical lesson, being the philosopher.
Yes, and what's wonderful about that, and thank you very much, Susan, is that I didn't see this coming. If someone had told me not only are you going to have to empty 1203 but write a book about it, I would have just put on my Leonard Cohen CDs and run for the hills. I can't imagine, but the book almost wrote itself. You know, it was just so true and so universal, and that's what I find, because the storytelling that has greeted me everywhere I've been and with emails from readers that I so love. Mm-hmm. Well, number one, everybody wants my mother's recipe for potato salad, mm-hmm. but also they want to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. Because everyone has stories of what they learned and how they changed perspective, perhaps, mm-hmm. when they emptied a home, how they understood people better, and how it's never too late to sort of change your perspective on how things are. And I think that was the biggest lesson for me was it was my choice, Susan, how to look at this responsibility of emptying 1203. Mm-hmm. So how was I going to look at it? And those 2-year-old being kissed photos showed me you're going to return the love now, and that straightened everything out for me. So it's always our choice how to look at things. Many people in different businesses tell me they're using the book because it's really sort of a primer on how to handle a difficult situation.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what the situation is. It's how we choose to approach it and to think about it. And so you know, I trusted that it would work out, and it has beyond my wildest dreams. I still get to go home mm-hmm. talking about it, visiting people to give talks, hearing how they're using it in whatever their walk of life is. So I'm still a little girl of 1203.
Absolutely. And Marietta, do you find, at least I have found, that every place I've lived holds a space, no matter how long or how brief, holds a space within my own space?
Oh, yes, very much so. And I will have people tell me, a chemistry prep professor from the University of Virginia, Susan, said, when I retired from chemistry after 40 years, I felt this way about my office because I saw the change in chemistry different experiments and different discoveries in 40 years. I saw the growth in my students over 40 years. And he said, when I left, I couldn't close the door. I left the door slightly mm-hmm. ajar. And so, yes, it's any place that we have given part of the time of our lives. There are people who have to move due to job transfer, or people, I've gone to a lot of places, Susan, that have had, particularly in North Carolina, where that was hit very hard by Hurricane Florence, and a year later they're still not home.
Mm-hmm.
And so a minister at a church down there got a case of books to give to those families who one day hope to come home again. So there are all sorts of leave takings, but mm-hmm. leave takings can come with memories and with lessons, and that's the good news.
Yes, absolutely. And before we go, Marietta, I wanted to ask you, that very last day after emptying 1203, and what would you say the house spoke to you? What did you hear? What was that takeaway that when you probably stood there, I'm assuming, and kind of looked around and really felt it, that this was it?
That you've been a really lucky person,
mm-hmm.
that life is beautiful, it's worth living. Gratitude should be the way that I wake up every morning, mm-hmm. and that that joy is ours for the taking, and regardless of the circumstances of our lives. And if we have a moment, it's brief, I would read just the last small section, Susan, if I may, of
yes.
Billy and me leaving.
Yes, I'd love that.
Oh, Billy, time's up here. We're leaving 1203. I deadheaded plants, filled bird feeders and bird baths, swept the patio, grabbed Billy's leash from the stoop railing, packed a few last things in the car. Recognizing the opening notes of a hymn ringing out from the nearby carillon, I snapped out of my dawdling ways. That one song of all songs, soaring over 1203 at this moment and for the first time in my memory? How sweet the sound. Gumption time. I patted the kitchen counter, closed the door behind me, latched the back gate, and lifted Billy into the car. Strains of an old tune saluted our departure, those splendid church bells pealing Amazing Grace. On the drive back to Charlottesville, I reached for the windshield wipers, laughing through my tears at the sunny day. These tears, triggered by beauty, dropped like beads from my eyes. I've caught a lot of breaks in my life, but none compares to this opportunity to stop, to turn, and to look back at all the lives entwined at 1203, to appreciate them together and alone in their fullness. Everyone did their best. As chronicler of this time, I conclude that all is well. Everyone is young and healthy. The world is as ever full of promise. Our lives, wrapped up in so many other lives then and now, still rich in love. Good rises, stretches, expands, and grace will lead us home.
Wonderful. Marietta McCarty, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us this morning from the beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia. It has been a total pleasure.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's as close as I'm going to get to the Pacific for a while, so thank you for having me virtually to your beautiful area.
You're more than welcome, and best of luck with you with your new book, Leaving 1203, Emptying a Home, Filling the Heart, published by The Philosophy Shop. Marietta McCarty, thank you so much.
Thank you.
My special guest, you heard, was Marietta McCarty, and that wraps it up for today's Pieces of Peace. I want to thank you all for joining me this morning. And don't forget that an enemy is one whose story we have not heard. And that there is a crack in everything, and that is how the light gets in.
They sing at the break of day. Start again, I heard them say.